Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you the fifth and sixth, the last two Mishnayot of Vav Metzia. They are lengthy, but fairly straightforward. Mishaya kodlo samuch leginat chaveiro v'nafal, v'amar lo p'nei avanecha, v'amar lo higiyucha, ein shomim lo. So if our wall, let's say we own a wall, falls into the property, the garden of our next door neighbor. Now, it's not clear if the words in the Mishnah of Amar lo p'nei avanecha, and the guy tells you, get your stones out of here, are necessary. We're going to see in the next case that even if the person who is affected by your falling property does not explicitly state that he doesn't want the items, nonetheless, the rest of the case would seem to apply. Which means even though there wasn't a direct rejection, and you tell the guy, Higiyucha, listen, I don't want to clear up my stones. They're all yours. They're a gift, and they're worth money. So you might think that he's getting a benefit from them, and just because they fell into his property, it's worth his while to clear them up, and then he owns a bunch of stones. And the answer is no, Ein Shomim Lo, you can't do that unless he explicitly tells you that he wants them. However, Mishikabal Alav, Mishikibel Alav, Amar lo, heilech et itziotecha v'ani etolet sheli, ein shomim lo. If your neighbor agreed and said, yeah, okay, I'll take those stones, yeah, that's okay with me, and I'll pay the price, so to speak, of cleaning them up, but once I do, they're all mine. And then you change your mind, and you say, heilech et itziotecha, you know what? I'll pay you for all that hard, back-breaking work that you did, since the work is already done, and now I'll pay you for your work and I'll take back my stones, then once again you're out of luck, because once he's decided to take your stones and you said, hey, they're yours to take, you can't go back and change your mind later on. Similarly, regarding when it's too late to make new conditions, Asochar tapo la'asot imo b'tevin v'kash, v'amar lo tein li schari, v'amar lo tol ma sha'asita b'scharcha. So you hire somebody to work gathering tevin and kash. Those are the two parts of the stalks of the wheat. One is still attached to the ground after you cut it with a scythe or a sickle, and the other part is attached to the top, which is still attached to the wheat kernels at the top. It's tevin and kash. The former, the one that's stuck to the ground, is good for fertilization. The latter is good for hay, for burning, for all the kinds of things that you might do for hay, for animal feed. So essentially, when you hired this guy and you promised to pay him, let's say, $100, and then when you're finished, you're like, you know what, I don't want to pay $100. Why don't you take $100 worth of hay that you worked on instead? So the Mishnah says, Ein Shomim Lo. You can't do that. If you decide that it's going to be a cash payment, you can't then supply goods in exchange of that cash, unless the person says okay, which is the next part of the case. Misha kibil alav. If the guy said okay, I'll take the tevin and the kash, I'll take the hay, and then instead of the cash equivalent, and then you change your mind, and you're like, oh, you know what? I'd rather pay him the cash, and I'd rather keep the tevin and the kash because they're useful for fertilization, for feeding your animals, whatever it is. Once again, ein shomim lo, which means once you make the deal, that's the deal. If the guy accepts your deal, you can't then go back and make a different deal. And now on to a new topic, which is how much rights and responsibilities does a person have to do his work or take his stuff into a public domain, a reshut harabim, which does not belong to him but belongs to the public, which belongs to the public. Hamotzi zevel l'reshut harabim, hamotzi motzi v'mezabel mezabel. So if you take fertilizer out of your fields and you dump it into a public place, so the answer is you can do that. But hamotzi motzi, as soon as you bring it out, mezabel mezabel, you have to have somebody ready to pick it up, scoop it up, and then move it, I guess, to his own field where he's going to use his fertilizer. Which means you can't just dump it for a long-term purpose, just sort of like dumping your garbage to a public place. But if you know that somebody's going to do a quick pickup on it, and you have somebody to do a quick pickup on it, then that's okay. Moreover, ein shorim tit birishut harabim ve'ein lovlim levanim. So you can't immerse lime, which is like a stone. They would immerse it and it would come looser and would turn into a material that you can plaster houses, or you can actually make bricks out of. So you can't leave it immersing in a public place because that would take a long period of time. Also, you couldn't make levanim. Ein lovnim levanim. You can't make bricks out there in a reshut harabim. That is, let's say I don't want to make bricks in my own yard. It's a lot of trouble. It takes up space. So I'll go into this public domain and I'll put out my bricks and I'll lay them out. It'll take a few days to dry and eventually I'll take them back into my private place. So the Mishnah says you can't do these things because they're a public nuisance, they're a public hazard. You're not allowed to take advantage of a public place for an extended period of time. However, aval govlim tit birshut arabim, you could take the same lime, not to be shored, not to to immerse it in water until it becomes workable, but let's say it's already loosened. You just want to knead it up and get it nice and smooth so you can take it to your house and plaster up the cracks and all. In the wall, or you can white wall your house with it. So that's okay because you're only going to be there for a short period of time. Avalo de venim. But you can't take that already softened. So you can't take hard teeth, hard limestone, and turn it into soft lime to work with because that takes a long time. You can knead already softened lime into a nice smooth plaster that you can use because it's going to be a short period of time. But avalo de venim. But then you can't go and say, all right, I've got this nice loose lime, I'll make it into blocks and turn it into nice building bricks, because once again that takes a long time, and you are allowed to use Rashut Arabim, but only if it's going to be a quick, short, sharp use, and the stuff that you put in there is going to come out as quickly as possible. There's an immediate removal of those items. Similarly, Habonim Rashut Arabim. So let's say you're building, not that you're building Rashut Arabim, of course you're not allowed to, you can only build in your own place, but you're using the Rashut Arabim as a landing place for your stone. So let's say the stone company dumps off, I don't know, 2 tons of gigantic stones next to your house in a public place, because they can't fit it all on your property, and you're going to take the stones piece by piece into your area to build. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? And the answer is, Hamevi avani mevi vahabone bone. Only if, at the time when the person brings the stones, you have another guy ready to build, or you ready to take those stones and move it to the building area, then yeah, then you can leave that big pile of stones at a Shura Rabim, because essentially as soon as it's coming in, you're removing it and you're actually currently doing the work. It's going to take up a little space or a lot of space from Shura Rabim, but there's a clear flow where it's not going to last forever. You're moving those goods, and therefore it's okay to leave things for Shura Rabim because it's clear that you're moving them as quickly as you can. However, in all these conditions, even where the rabbis say that you are allowed to temporarily use this public space, im hazik mishali masha hizik. So if damage occurred because of the bricks or whatever it was, the stones that you left in Shura Rabim, you are liable to pay for the damage. Yes, you're allowed to use it for short periods of time, but don't think that you can get away with not having to pay up if damage occurs because of the things that you left into the Rashut Arabim, because it really didn't belong there, it really belonged in your own property. Only in your own property are you not responsible for the damage that items cause. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel disagrees with this whole premise when it comes to the building, and he says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Af Metakein Hu Et Melachto Lifnei Shloshim Yom. So when it comes to construction, you're allowed to set up 30 days beforehand as a sort of a construction staging area. However, it's not clear from Rabbi Shimon Gamliel if he's disagreeing about the time span only, or he's also disagreeing about what happens if damages occur. It could be that you get 30 days, and if there are incidental damages, you do not have to pay those incidental damages. Or it could be, he agrees with the Tanakhama, that you do have to pay for the incidental damages, but you do get a full 30 days to move your goods. Either way, we don't follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, we follow the Tanakhama. You got to move those goods that you put in the Rashut Arabim out as quickly as you can. Now, the final Mishnah presents an interesting case, which is also about neighbors, like our last Mishnah started off with. In this case, the neighbors are farmers, and they have adjoining farms in a strange configuration. Shtei ginot zu al gav zu, v'hayerek bein tayim. So what you have is one garden on top of another, one field to grow produce right on top of another. Now, not literally on top, but that means they're sort of next to each other, and in between is a slope. Probably not a vertical slope, but probably a steep slope which connects the lower field to the upper field. And there are vegetables, there's produce growing on that slope, which is between and connecting the two properties, the upper property with the lower property. So the question is, who do the vegetables that are growing on the slope belong to? Do they belong to Mr. Upper Property or Mr. Lower Property? So Rav Meir Omer Shel Elyon, Rav Yehuda Omer Shel Tachton. Rav Yehuda says the upper guy has the upper hand, so to speak. Rabbi Yehuda says the owner of the lower garden is the one who owns the vegetables that are growing on that slope. And Rabbi Meir is now about to tell us why he feels that's true. And the argument that he's about to have with Rabbi Yehuda has to do with who can control the existence of the vegetables that are growing. And if you can prevent those vegetables from growing, that means that you are essentially responsible for the existence of the vegetables, and therefore you own them. So, Amar Rabbi Meir, in Yirtzeh Elyon Likach Dafaro in Kanyerek. So, Rabbi Meir says, that is, he says to Rabbi Yehuda, if the upper guy wanted to strip away all of his soil, and dig straight down, so he was on the same level as the lower hand guy, so there would be no slope for the vegetables to grow on. Therefore, the vegetables only exist because the upper guy decides not to strip away the soil, and therefore, de facto, it belongs to the upper guy. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda counters with the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the lower garden owner, if he wanted to keep those vegetables from existing, he could start piling on soil onto his property until it grows and grows, until his land grows higher, until it's on the same level as the upper garden, which means he fills the space, he's allowed to fill the space where the vegetables existed, which means that he's allowed to remove the air or the space where they grow, and therefore the vegetables only exist because of his forbearance, because he decided to leave the air free in that space for the vegetables to grow. Therefore, their existence is up to the lower guy, and therefore the vegetables belong to the lower guy. So I'm Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says back to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Me'achar sheshnei micholim l'chodet zetzeh. So now what we prove is that each one has the equal hand. They're equally capable of wiping out the vegetables and preventing the other guy from getting the vegetables based on their manipulation of their own land. So therefore, roi mehechan yerek zechai, and let's just go back to the simple facts, not who causes with their own personal power and control, which farmer allows the garden to grow, because in that way they're equal. But look at the soil. The soil is the upper guy's soil. It belongs to him, not the lower guy's soil. And the vegetables are popping out of the upper guy's soil. And therefore, the vegetables belong to the upper hand guy. Just practically, it's not a prevention issue. Just where are the items planted? And the answer is in the soil of the upper guy, not the soil of the lower guy. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Meir. And perhaps in the spirit of compromise, or in the spirit of understanding when a person is willing to take a possession and when he's willing to give up his claim, he says, Kol she elyon yachol lifshot et yado v'litol hari hu shelo v'ashar shel tachton. So, as long as the upper guy's owner has his feet planted in his own territory, which is really the only place he could go, and he reaches down the slope and he could pluck the vegetables as far down as he could reach, those items belong to him because he agrees with Rabbi Meir that the soil of the upper guy grew in and really the vegetables are his. However, anything lower than that, a person is not going to put himself out to hang precariously from a cliff just so he could grab some tomatoes or what have you. And therefore, de facto, they become the property of the lower garden's owner because the upper garden owner is not going to want it. And that's it for now for Bava Metzia. May we, God willing, return soon, Bahadran Alecha, to study you once again.